Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
After listening to our next guest, I think you might start to see life's obstacles in a slightly different light. His name is Sam Cawthorn, the Tasmanian Young Australian of the Year for 2009. 3 years ago, Sam was leading a busy life as a dad and a performing arts teacher when he was involved in a near-fatal car accident. His right arm had to be amputated, his right leg was permanently disabled, yet despite all of that, Sam now leads an even busier life. He's travelling the world giving motivational talks to thousands of people, he's raising 3 kids, writing books, playing the guitar with his motorised arm. I guess you're proof that in many ways the glass really can be half full, can't it?
That's it. Look, that's exactly right. It's been an amazing journey.
Yeah. Well, welcome to Open House. Good to have you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Let's explore your story. Let's go back to the beginning, where I guess all these stories begin, you know, back in the family home and the little Sam growing up. Tell us a bit about your background. Tassie born and bred.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, my mum, she's Indian. My father, he's Scottish. But most of us were all born here in Australia. Now, I'm one of 11. There are 7 boys. There are 4 girls. And
wow.
I can tell you something now. Being brought up in a large family has so many benefits. We had so much fun. It was great.
Where are you in the birth order, though?
I was third youngest, actually, yeah.
Okay.
So I'm third youngest. And I'm actually an uncle something like 27 times at the moment.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So you're third from the bottom would mean you're the one that gets forgotten when everybody goes out to the family picnic and they come back and say, we've forgotten somebody. We've missed somebody.
It's interesting. Every single one of my family actually went back to India with mum. Except me.
Oh.
So I had to do something about it. So this year I got to go to India.
Is that right? And it was a Christian family as well. Tell me about the religiosity of the family and the upbringing you had in that regard.
Yeah, look, it was quite a strict upbringing. Obviously, having 11 of us, parents needed to be very strict. But also at the same time, quite religious as well. We sort of got forced to. Things like lifting our hands up and praying and being on our knees. And
what about TV, radio, those kinds of things?
Ah, no, look, we weren't really allowed to watch telly. We weren't allowed to watch radio. We weren't allowed to read comics, go to friends' houses, anything like that. Actually, so I lie. We were allowed to watch telly, but that was only after mum and dad had screened it first, had deleted all the kissing scenes, and then we're allowed to then watch these black and white golden oldies. It was a fun lifestyle.
So when you look back at those early years, how did you feel about that kind of environment that you were growing up in?
Yeah, look, it's interesting. At the time, you know, it was really, really strict. And we were all sort of born and raised on this farm type of environment. So when I went to leave home, I hadn't really experienced the big wide world. So straight away, most of us actually then went on to rebel. And so for me, it got influenced by a very wrong and negative type of company. And I found myself, you know, literally on the streets, you know, smoking dope and getting drunk every type of weekend, going out. And obviously that whole contrast, I hadn't really prepared me for the wide world that it was and being influenced in a very negative way.
How old were you when you went on your little rebellion?
About 15 years old, I actually left home at a very young age. So again, you know, I hadn't really known this experience.
And was it because you wanted to escape that?
Or...
Yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to bust out of that.
Mm. Now, where did the drugs come in, though? I mean, you got to the big city. How did you find yourself on the street and smoking drugs?
Well, initially, I actually started off at college down there in Hobart in Tasmania and suppose, you know, just hanging out with the wrong company. You know, these guys, they just sort of looked really cool. They were just smoking cigarettes on school ground. And so from cigarette smoking, we then got into smoking weed. So I was kicked out of school. I was here hanging out with guys on the streets. I was, you know, just out at nightclubs smoking weed. And right then and there, I had to make a big decision in my life. Do I need to continue on down this path, or am I actually going to do something about my life?
Mm. Sam Cawthorn is with us. He is the Tasmanian Young Australian of the Year for 2009. We're going to get to the part of the story where he has this accident that totally changes his life. It's only 3 years ago that accident happened. So, yeah, you're facing the situation. You've been kicked out of school, what, because of the drugs?
Yeah, pretty much so. Yeah, I was dealing drugs and I shouldn't have been and obviously the principal of the school just kicked me out.
Where were you when you decided, okay, I've got some sort of decision to make?
to be quite honest, it was a girl. It's always about a girl, isn't it? I met this girl at college, and her name was Kate. She was an absolute stunner. And now she had actually sort of realised that I was hanging out with these bad guys, and at one stage, yeah, we split up. But she was so strong and just completely unconditional love for me. And so right then and there, she gave me a decision. She said, Sam, it's either your friends or it's either me. And at first I thought, man, that's so mean. But now looking back at it, it was the best thing that someone could ever have done to me. So obviously I actually chose the girl. Within a year, we actually got married.
Is that right?
We had a couple of kids. And obviously all through that, I then started a lot of theatre and singing and dancing and was involved in sales. So yeah, it's been an amazing journey since then.
And then at some stage you do return to your faith because you became a youth pastor in a church.
Yeah, the whole transition from my faith was also around that same time as making the decision not to hang out with my friends but actually go with this girl. And that was also the same transition where then we both went into church at that time. Now, my wife, she actually got brought up as a Mormon. And so her parents are Mormons and everything. So again, she had a very sort of strict upbringing and the very traditional style of Mormonism. And so here we were. We both started to go to this Christian city church in Hobart, Tasmania.
Certainly different to what she's experienced. And what was your kind of denominational affiliation when you were growing up? I'm thinking it's either Catholic or maybe a strict Brethren or something like that.
Yeah, look, it probably would even be like a strict Baptist, I would say. Yeah, yeah. Look, my parents don't really like putting themselves under necessarily a particular religion as such.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it was just a very, very strict house church type environment.
Yeah. Right. So you walk into this Christian city church together, which is interesting.
Yes.
So I guess the turnaround in your spiritual lives actually happened around about the same time. What happened?
Yeah, look, it was amazing. We both went to this church and, you know, we both experienced it for the first time. You know, these loud people on stage, the lights, the energy. It was just amazing. And then obviously right at the end of the message, we both had our eyes closed. We're both sitting next to each other. And there was a thing where they sort of say, look, it's like an altar call where they say, put your hand up if you want to make a commitment right now. And I just decided just to put my hand up. You know, this is definitely, I'm really, really liking this environment. Not knowing that Kate had also put her hand up as well. And so right then and there, Kate and I both gave our hearts to Christ, not knowing that we both had done it. And so obviously that whole experience was a whole new chapter in our lives. Mm. Right then and there, I made 100% commitment. And so from there, we actually then moved from Hobart through to Launceston to help out with Christian City Church in Launceston. We then opened up this youth ministry. And at one stage there, we had up to 300 youth coming along to our youth ministry in Launceston, Tasmania.
Sam Cawthorne is with us, the Tasmanian Young Australian of the Year for 2009. Well, so far, the story is beautiful, isn't it?
It
is. It's wonderful. It's, you know, it's ending happily. You know, you've met your wife and you're starting to have kids and you've got some, you know, wonderful role that you're doing in the church, and young people are discovering who God is, who Christ is. And then 2006, you have this car accident. Tell me about that. What you know of it?
It was October the 3rd, 2006. I was actually working full time for the federal government as an industry advisor. So there was a lot of travel and everything like that. Also, on top of that, I was a youth pastor. I still was doing a lot of music as well. And I remember very clearly the day I got up of a morning and I said goodbye to my kids and I jumped in my company car, which is a big V8 Statesman. I drove from Launceston through to Burnie. I had a meeting there in Burnie. Actually, I wanted to tell you another thing as well. After my meeting there in Burnie, I shook someone's hand. And it was one of those handshakes that a hand's just locked. Guys, it was the last handshake I ever had. I remember that very clearly. Half an hour later, it was my fault. I veered onto the wrong side of the road. And the next thing I remember was waking up after the actual accident happened. I was actually there in the car.
Hmm. That's something like a 206 kilometer an hour impact or something for both you and the other person that you careered into.
I was going 104 and the truck was going 102. It was a semi-trailer. The police has ruled out whether or not it was a car problem, so I reckon it was probably fatigue. I was doing 1,500 to 2,000 kilometres every single week in this car. So I reckon it was probably fatigue.
You just
so
blanked out. You just micro-slept.
Completely micro-slept. And I do remember the noise of the impact. I remember a very, very large bang. And then I remember cars had stopped. People were running over towards the car. I remember seeing the condition of my body. I'll give you an idea of the impact. The steering wheel of my car was underneath the passenger seat. My elbow had been ripped from my arm and was 25 metres away from the car.
At some stage, you fall into a coma?
Yeah, so I was awake for about 15 to 20 minutes. And I remember people running over to the car and all that type of stuff. The last thing I remember was the noise of the ambulance. And I remember very, very clearly me yelling to my rescuers, you know, look, tell my wife I love her, tell my kids I love them. I actually thought, you know, I'm going to have my last breath. I was then told I'd actually stopped breathing. I was even told that my heart had also stopped as well. Right there I actually died.
And for how long?
I don't know exactly how long. I do know the jaws of life then came, cut me out of the car. They put me in the ambulance. During that time, I was then resuscitated.
Yeah.
But then obviously I was in a coma. They took me back to the hospital. I was there actually then in a coma. Close to a week, 7 days.
Okay. Wow. Now, that itself, I guess you'd be thankful that God has given you your life back. For a moment there, it looked like it probably was on its way out.
That's exactly right. Look, I remember clearly, you know, sort of sitting there with my rescuers. They were trying to keep me awake. And I can tell you something now, you know, if I did not have the faith, I couldn't confidently say that I'd be here today. That was one thing that I was holding on to. I was yelling out to God. And having that strong faith was the number one reason why I believe I'm still here today.
Mm. So you are in a coma for a week, then finally you wake up. At what stage did the gravity of your situation, you had to have your right arm amputated, your right leg, you can't bend anymore. Mm. At what stage did that hit you?
Get this, the doctor said to me initially, they said, Sam, you will never be able to walk ever again. You'll be in a wheelchair for the rest of your life. Sam, you will never be able to walk your little girls down the aisle on your wedding day. Sam, you'll never be able to dance ever again. You'll never be able to play the guitar ever again. That was really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And initially, I was actually in denial. I was thinking, man, this hasn't happened to me. You know, this. I'm just in a dream. I'm in a nightmare here. I'm living a movie. This hasn't happened. That went on for about 2 days. I did not accept it. When I had accepted it, I'll tell you something now. I spent about 3 days, and I was just crying. I was just crying, and I was just crying. After those 3 days, I made a commitment. I thought, look, I now need to just put this behind me, and now I need to just press forward to what lies ahead.
Must have been really tough for your wife as well to know that her life and your life together as a married couple and as a family is going to be forever changed after this accident.
We all don't really know what a wife would feel like going through something like this. She actually drove past the accident site about 45 minutes after my car accident. She saw the car because she was driving to the hospital after she had got the
she knew that phone call. She knew that that was actually the accident that her husband had been involved in, or did she just happen to drive past?
No, she actually knew that that was my accident. Yeah, because she was on the way to the hospital. So obviously she could see the car. She could see obviously the condition of the car. And then when she got to the hospital, the actual chaplain came and met her at the door, and she was just an absolute mess. And obviously then they started to connect with her and talk to her. But she has been an absolute rock for me. She's been so strong and so supportive. I feel so blessed and really honored to have the most amazing woman in my life. She has shown so much courage through this. And my kids are amazing. My little girl, she was 4 years old. I remember clearly her running into the hospital, and she jumped up on the bed. I was just in tears for seeing her. It was 2 days after I came out of a coma. And she goes to me, Daddy, did you have a car accident? And I said, yeah. And she goes, and you lost your arm? And I said, yeah. And she goes, and the doctors, they couldn't find your arm anywhere? Kids are just amazing.
Yes. Yeah. And that would have been the way that she was kind of processing it as well, just trying, little mind trying to say, what could have actually happened to my dad? Yeah. But I guess those moments must have been the tonic that probably you needed.
Yeah, yeah, look, absolutely. Obviously, my faith was the number one thing. But the number two thing, and these are the two things that got me through, was obviously my faith and obviously my relationships. So that was my family, that was my parents, that was my brothers, my sisters, and my amazing wife and two little girls. Mm. When I woke up from a coma, my entire family was right there. They'd all flown into Launceston. Very significant, special, defining moment in my life. My entire family right there by my bed coming out of a coma.
Mm. So let's talk about that faith aspect then. You are lying there in the bed. You've had two or three days of just weeping and, I guess, grieving over what you've actually lost physically. And I guess the opportunities that might have been lost in your mind at least then as well. Tell me about the prayer. Tell me about what you were saying to God after that moment. Help people out spiritually at this point in time as to where you go in a situation like that. When you're probably going, why, God, why? Yeah.
We all have those questions. Why did this happen to me? Why did I have to lose my arm? Why did I have to be in a wheelchair? And obviously these questions, you know, resonated in me. But think about it is, you know, God gave me such a strong word. He said, you know, it's all about hope. You know, because what hope does for me is actually holding on that the future is going to be better, that the future lies blessings, that the future is actually is going to be more positive in Christ. Because I knew that I could not get through this in my own strength. We don't possess all the tools and all the skills and all the right mindset at all ourselves, that we do need a higher power.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to rely on God to get through this for both a mindset aspect, a physical aspect, for both a relationship aspect, financial aspect. I knew that I cannot rely on me. I can only rely on my faith in God.
At what point did you have that first glimmer that, wow, the hope that I'm holding on to by faith is maybe actually starting to become a reality?
Great question, you know. After realizing that this has happened, I can't hold on to it. I cannot hold on to this burden, this adversity, this crisis. I cannot hold on to it. So I had to release it. And I knew that that whole process there, after about 3 days of realizing that this has happened to me, just me releasing it and saying, God, I can't do this. I'm now just going to give it all over to you. And once I had done that, I can tell you something now. My whole future looked so much more positive.
Mm.
You know, I knew that I had a purpose. I knew I had a destiny. And get this, I knew that this happened for a reason. This accident happened for a divine reason and a divine purpose. And I knew that I could trust in my God for that.
You realize that a whole bunch of people will be listening and saying, hang on, you had your right arm amputated, your right leg doesn't work anymore, and you're saying this could be God that actually has put some sort of purpose together through something like that. What would you now say has actually been that purpose?
Thing about it is, I can rest on the past. I can think about, okay, who done this to me? Why did it happen? Everything like that. For me, a very strong word for me is forgetting the things of the past and pressing forward to what lies ahead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the whole age-old argument, you know, does God give this to us? I know that God gives us a hope and a future. What adversity can try and, or what the devil can try and pull us down no matter what, I know that God has given us a hope. So for me, it is forgetting the things of the past. It's the past. I don't want to change the past. You know, I don't want to play God. This is the way that I was intended to be today. And so for me, I'm forgetting the things of the past and I'm pressing forward to what lies ahead.
This is Open House right across the nation, theopenhouse.net.au, for our chat with Sam Cawthorn, 2009 Tasmanian Young Australian of the Year. Let's talk about your rehabilitation, because then you do start to pull out. You're in a wheelchair for, was it a year?
Initially, I was in hospital all up for about 5 months. And I actually got out of a wheelchair 2 days before my 1 year anniversary. In a way, that was my 40 years in the wilderness, you know, of preparation up until such time as I was released outside of a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And in the last year and a half, I've had the most amazing year and a half of my entire life.
Well, you were just telling me during the week that this month alone, you've had something like 52 plane flights jumping around around the country speaking. Obviously, the Young Tasmanian Young Australia of the Year Award has fueled that so that everybody is keen to hear your story, which is just wonderful. Again, part of that kind of plan, purpose that God has had in this, what has been a tragic story, and now he's bringing something good out of it. Let's talk about your motorized arm. It's quite a work of art, really, isn't it?
Look, it is. It's absolutely brilliant. It actually looks, I've got a hand which looks exactly the same as my hand. Well, they try and make it cosmetically the same color, everything like that. But then the rest of the arm is all bling. It's like a silver stainless steel. It looks absolutely, it looks like $1 million. They talk about the $6 million man. Look, I would like to consider myself as the $6 million man.
What is it worth? I mean, what is something like that worth? You know, the technology and everything.
It's worth about $95,000, and I need a new arm every 3 years.
How do they connect? I guess the brain is sending the signals down your arm, and somehow they've got the electrodes that connect it up with the machine.
Yeah, look, that's pretty much so it. I've actually got these tiny little sensors, which is actually inside the socket of my arm, and so I put my arm in, and so as I move my nerves and my muscles, it actually then operates all the motors inside my hand. And my wrist, it's very cool. My wrist can actually turn around and then keep turning round and round and round and round.
Now, that's really interesting. Cool. 360 degrees, he's just going round and round and round. Now, you actually played a bit of a joke on Kevin Rudd as well, didn't you?
Look, I had the most amazing opportunity to go to Canberra and meet the Prime Minister of Australia. I was thinking, what can I do in order for him to remember me? The PM probably meets hundreds of people every day, as if he's going to remember everyone. So as I went to go and shake the Prime Minister's hand, walking into his house there at the lodge in Canberra, I had a long sleeve shirt on. He didn't notice that I had a prosthetic arm. As he went to shake my arm, my hand came off into the Prime Minister's hand.
Right, well, I bet he'll never forget you after that.
Look, that's exactly right. It was a brilliant. His wife was there. She started cracking up laughing. The world's media started coming in, taking photos, and the Prime Minister just standing there holding my hand.
He must have been shocked for a while, though.
He took it as a great joke. He then had a big laugh, and then he told me about one of his other staff members that actually had a prosthetic leg, and regularly he would, you know, sort of get a big fork and stick it right in his leg because you know, it wouldn't obviously hurt him at all. So he took it as a great joke. And in his Australia Day speech, it was brilliant. He actually, he went on to say that today we're surrounded by very significant Australians, but the guy that I remember the most was the guy that left his hand in my hand. And then the Prime Minister turned over to me and he goes, "And thank you, Sam. I'm still recovering from therapy today."
Yes, I bet he is too. You can also do some pretty cool party tricks with the hand too, can't you?
Yeah, look, I can also crush a glass bottle with my hand, which is absolutely brilliant, yeah.
So people have to be careful if they shake your hand, don't they? I mean, you could do some quite a bit of damage.
I could if I wanted to, absolutely.
So when you say you wanted to, if you wanted to, so do you just think, okay, clench tighter, tighter, tighter? Is that what you do?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I actually use my muscles and my nerves, so I could actually control how much pressure I have and how much grip I am actually gripping onto things.
I'm never getting on your bad side. Not that you would do anything nasty, that's for sure. Well, it's fascinating. There'll be a whole bunch of people who are listening to us and are saying, well, I'm going through my own stuff. You know, it may not be something as tragic or as maybe dramatic as yours with the car crash that left you in this kind of position, but they'll be saying, you know, I am struggling, in all honesty, I'm struggling. I might even have a Christian faith, but I'm struggling to hold on to hope that anything is going to change. Mm. What do you say to them?
Well, I think we all have problems. We all have issues. We all have burdens. Everyone has it. But it's not about the problem. You know, it's actually how we can pick ourselves up and continue to run our race. I met a guy the other day. He was born with no arms and no legs. So here is a guy born with no arms and no legs, yet he's one of the most positive people I've ever met. Mm. You know, sometimes we just need perspective. You know, and we need to realize how really and truly blessed we really are and say, wait a second, you know, these problems, these issues that I think I've got, they're really nothing. You know, look, I've still got two hands, I've still got two legs, whatever it might be. We cannot take life and we cannot take anything for granted.
Well, it's been fascinating to talk to you. Thanks so much, Sam.
Great.
Yeah, Sam Cawthorne, who is the Tasmanian Young Australian of the Year for 2009, and what an amazing story. His website is bemotivated.com.au, bemotivated.com.au for more of Sam's story and more of his lessons he's learnt through the journey.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.